funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What are the consequences of being fat in America? While myriad studies have probed the links between excess weight and poor health, far less attention has been paid to the fact that higher weight people get treated differently and usually worse than their lower weight neighbors and coworkers. Fat people are less likely to be hired than thin people, even with equal job qualifications. They are openly criticized by the media and even their loved ones, and tend to receive less care and attention even from their own doctors. So why do we find it so easy to consider fat people second-class citizens in America, especially given the fact that fully two-thirds of us fall into that category? The emerging field of fat studies seeks to explore those questions, and my guest today is here to talk about some of the work that is underway. Esther Rosenblum is professor of women's studies at San Diego University. She is a co-editor, along with Sandra Salovey, of the new book, The Fat Studies Reader. Esther, welcome to Think.
Thank you.
I'd like to start by asking you to discuss what fat studies is and what it is not.
Well, fat studies is a field of scholarship that believes that all people should be treated with respect regardless of body size, and you've just gone through some of the areas where fat people are discriminated against. And fat studies scholars realize that weight, like height, is a characteristic that varies across any community. And so fat studies tries to remove the negative associations that society has about fat and the body. And in that sense, it's very similar to other academic disciplines that focus on gender or race or age or ethnicity, et cetera.
Let's talk about the use of the word fat, because many people think of that as a much more offensive term than, say, calling someone overweight or even obese. Can you talk about why you prefer to say fat?
Yeah, you know, that term was coined back in the 1960s by some of the early activists, including NAFA, which is the National Association to Advance Fat Acceptance. And the reason they used the word fat is they felt that the word obese, for example, comes from Greek. And in English, we use a lot of Greek and Latin terms to talk about medical illnesses. And one of the things I've noticed that is when groups organize, one of the first things they do is they tend to change the language or the word that's been used, and often they reclaim a word that's actually been used against them. So, for example, homosexuality, another word that was Greek and Latin, and that was actually considered to be a mental illness until the 1970s, when gay rights groups organized, they used the word gay, and then actually have also reclaimed the word queer, you know, and said, let's take a word that's even been used against us, that's pejorative, and let's reclaim it. And so fat studies activists did that as well. They also felt that words like overweight and underweight and normal weight sort of imply that there is a certain weight that everybody should be at, when in fact, you know, people can be way under, way over, et cetera. And so they use the word fat because it's short, it's kind of in your face, and it really describes in many ways what people are afraid of, which is body fat.
Yeah, a point comes up in one of these essays, and I thought this was fascinating, that two-thirds of Americans can be categorized as fat according to medical definitions that we have these days, and the other third are sort of encouraged to be afraid of being fat.
Yes, and, you know, that's especially true for women. Women have always, throughout history and across many cultures, been told how to look far more so than men. And so not only are people who are fat told that they should lose weight or that they're not ideal, but many, many people who would be considered average weight or even thin are also being made to feel that they're too fat. And by the way, if you look at any media images or models or ads or commercials, those models, especially the women, are so thin that if anyone is looking at them who's average weight, they will actually feel very fat, and they will be much fatter than those media images.
At the heart of this lie some long-held assumptions about how and why people get fat. Can you talk about what modern science tells us about that?
Well, I mean, obviously, a lot of it has to do with people's body types, with their metabolism. You know, there's obviously a very strong genetic factor, and so there are many different ways in which, you know, we demonstrate that in our bodies. Height is another variable, and, you know, hair color and so on. So weight really varies tremendously, and people have a range in their weight that where they can go up or down. In some people, it's a very small range. In other people, it's a larger range, which is why we see some people who can gain or lose a lot of weight, although typically when they lose, they put it back on again. And others really can't even lose very much. They just have a very small range there.
How does the assignment of blame affect the way fat people are viewed in society?
Well, I think right now many norms about appearance have to do with weight, and you almost can't be too thin. So people are blamed very much for their weight in ways they're not blamed for other characteristics or other parts of their appearance, and so it makes people, you know, feel very bad. And some historians have said that it seems to be linked to, in the U.S., to our Puritan background, you know, with a strong focus on morality and giving up things, you know, not doing anything that's considered too hedonistic, like enjoying food, and also the Protestant work ethic. And there's also been historians who've noted that there are two times during the last century when women were fighting for their rights, particularly so. One was when women were fighting to get the vote in the 1910s, and the other was more around the 1960s. And both of those times, interestingly, was when women were, the pressure on women was to be very thin. And some people have said that when women are trying to get more power, they're actually told to take up less space, which I think is very interesting.
What's interesting when you talk about the idea of rejection of hedonism is that all of us can engage in a wide variety of hedonistic behaviors, but few of them are obvious to everybody who sees us as we walk down the street.
Well, you know, I mean, the assumption is that people who are fat eat a lot and that people who are thin are eating, you know, nutritious food or healthy food. And obviously that's not the case. We actually don't know from looking at somebody what they're eating, how much they're eating, how much they're exercising, things like that.
Now, many people, including a lot of medical professionals, will say that even if it's wrong that people are treated unkindly based on their body size, there are significant health risks associated with carrying extra weight. Can you give us your perspective on that?
Yeah, well, first of all, a very important thing to know is that in Western countries, including the U.S., fat people tend to be poor and richer people tend to be thinner. And so when we look at studies of health, you know, looking at a large community study, for example, and they're comparing fat and thin people, it's very important to keep in mind that they're really comparing poor people and rich people. And in the U.S., we know that poor people have so much less access to health care, including preventive treatment and health care in general and health insurance and so on. So that's a very important factor to keep in mind, that if you're looking at studies of weight and health, you need to control for income, because if you don't, you have a major bias there, really. Another factor is that many people who are fat will say that they really hate going in to see their doctor because of the way they're treated. You know, they're made to feel bad. They're made to feel that they have no right to be there. And so it's important that medical professionals are really aware that it's important to treat everybody with respect, all patients, and not just, you know, to make fat people feel bad. Putting people down is not going to make people adhere to any treatments.
One of the essays that caught my attention in the book describes a patient going into the doctor. She's 5'7 and 105 pounds and is desperate to lose, I think it's 20 or 30 pounds, and writes down everything she eats and is really fanatical about this. And there's a description of the way the doctor would appropriately react. And then you're asked to consider what would happen if that patient were 195 pounds and displayed the same obsessive behaviors and unhappiness with her body. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, that's a chapter by Deborah Burgard, who is an eating disorders specialist and therapist. And what she's talking about there is that, you know, we treat thin people who have eating disorders very differently than a fat person. By the way, I hear a lot of background noise. I don't know if that's my phone or the radio line. Then we would treat a fat person who's also being sort of obsessive and restricting their intake and exercising compulsively. And so it's important to realize that people are not born with eating disorders, that eating disorders, too, are a reaction to the tremendous prejudice and discrimination that people, especially women, have in society, and that all people who are being obsessive about how little they eat or how much they exercise, or using methods like vomiting or laxatives after they've eaten should be discouraged from doing that.
Does the ability to say, well, there are certain health conditions, things like diabetes and heart disease, that are, in fact, linked to carrying more weight than doctors think is appropriate, does that create a sort of love the sinner, hate the sin ethos?
Well, I also should point out that there are illnesses connected with being very thin. One example is osteoporosis. I have a few friends who are very thin. They're getting on into their 50s and 60s, and now they, you know, thanks to not having that weight that pushes their bones down and makes them more dense, are getting osteoporosis. So the point is, and the book actually has a chapter on health at every size, that everybody should be treated for the illness, not for things that we associate with the illness or with, you know, moral kinds of issues. So just as a thin person with osteoporosis should not be blamed for their weight, and in fact would find it very difficult to gain a large amount of weight, so similarly, somebody who has any illness should be treated for the illness and not for moral issues. And a good parallel to that would be HIV and AIDS, where early on, people with AIDS faced a huge amount of discrimination. Physicians refused to see them. There was a lot of misinformation. And I think we've come a long way on treating, you know, the virus and not in some way judging the person.
Do we overstate the dangers in the media and in sort of public discourse of being fat in America?
Well, the most important thing that I think I find fascinating is that, you know, despite the fact that people are getting fatter, we are living longer and longer and longer. We are outliving our thinner grandparents by, on average, by 20 years. That's almost a whole generation. So, yes, people are getting heavier in the country for several reasons, but they're also living much longer, and somehow we seem to ignore that. So, longevity is actually somewhat of a concern. There are many people now in their 90s and even over 100. And as you know, as our country gets older, we need to think about how to deal with this aging population. But, you know, the good news is that we are really living a long time. So the focus on sort of the obesity epidemic and the war on obesity really ignores this really great news that we are, you know, chances are that we are going to live a very long time.
There's a lot of research in the book that looks at job discrimination against fat people. People can walk in with the exact same credentials. And in fact, HR people who've been surveyed have actually said quite openly, well, yes, I would hire the thinner person if everything else were equal. What do you think explains that?
Well, first of all, one of the reasons that people can say that is it's perfectly legal to discriminate against fat people in most parts of the U.S. The state of Michigan is Michigan is the only state that has that has discrimination laws that do not allow you to discriminate based on weight. And then a few cities in the U.S., Washington, D.C., San Francisco, Santa Cruz, Madison, Wisconsin, and I think recently Binghamton, New York, also have those laws. But other than that, it's perfectly legal to say, we don't want you because of your weight. We're going to fire you because of your weight. We won't give you health insurance because of your weight. And I think that also affects women more than men, because women tend to be in the more service-related jobs, waitressing, clerical work, flight attendants, places where we can see them. And employers often discriminate very blatantly based on appearance.
Esther Rosenblum is my guest. She's professor of women's studies at San Diego University and a co-author of the new book, The Fat Studies Reader. You can join the conversation now by calling us at 1-800-933-5372, or you can send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education, announcing a new 9-month intensive CFP certificate program starting in January in Plano. You can learn more at smu.edu/plano-cfp.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is professor of women's studies at San Diego State University and co-editor of the Fat Studies Reader, Esther Rothblum. Esther, forgive me for getting your name wrong earlier. And thanks for letting us know. Esther Rothblum, if you would like to join our conversation this afternoon, you can call us at 1-800-933-5372, or you can send email to think@kera.org. Another really interesting element of the dynamic of being fat in America is that it is not necessarily a sort of fat people versus thin people setup that we have here. Everybody is sort of integrated and living among one another. And in fact, many fat people sort of share society's discomfort with the size and shape of their bodies.
That's right. You know, really, this is something that affects really almost all people. And a part of it, I think, is that there is a multi-billion dollar industry that tries to keep people feeling dissatisfied, wanting to look different, wanting to lose weight. And so not only are most women feeling uncomfortable with their weight, but also now increasingly more and more men and more children at younger and younger ages. And I've even seen a lot of products for diet pet food. So, you know, it affects so many people, millions of people in the U.S.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. We'll go first on the line to Robert in Waxahachie. Hi, Robert.
Hi.
Hi, go right ahead, please.
Yeah, I have a preface this with saying I haven't read the book, but I found it interesting the first two causes for obesity that she mentioned when she ran down her reasons were genetics and metabolism. And when the actual most common reason is unhealthy lifestyle, and I'm just worried that a book like this might give people that just have an unhealthy lifestyle an excuse to have that unhealthy lifestyle.
What do you think about that, Esther?
Well, Robert has an excellent point where fat studies scholars and physicians and health professionals are really on the same page, is that everybody should have access to nutritious food. And I don't just mean, you know, fruits and vegetables, but those are included, but also, you know, foods free from pesticides, foods free from all the kind of toxins and so on, really have access to nutritious food. And also everybody should have access to fun activities, not, you know, running on a treadmill and feeling like they should, but really enjoying the joy of movement. And the Health at Every Size movement, which is part of our book and many people endorse, says that let's make sure that everybody has access to nutritious food and a good lifestyle regardless of weight.
Mm-hmm. And you're not saying that people shouldn't exercise and things like that. It doesn't matter if you weigh 300 pounds or 110 pounds, you should be getting out and moving and taking care of your body.
That's right. And I also have to add that many people who are fat feel that they're ridiculed when they're out running or walking, that exercise equipment is not made to feel their body, to fit their body, and that exercise clothing isn't available. So I really want to put in a plug for all health clubs and exercise teams and so on to make sure that fat people are allowed to join.
And the assumption should not be, I'm guessing, that fat people are exercising to lose weight necessarily.
That's right. I mean, really, hopefully everybody is exercising because they enjoy it and because they find that it makes them feel good.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. We'll go next to Fort Worth and speak with Mark. Hi, Mark.
Hi, how are you all?
Fine, thank you.
Good. I had a quick question going back to Esther's comment earlier about the ability for employers to discriminate against fat people. And I wondered if you'd comment kind of on the employer's right to do so, given the added health care costs associated with overweight people and the cost then associated with bringing them on to their health care plans and their insurance plans. And to me, seems rather timely given the health care debate going on in our nation right now.
Thanks for your call.
Well, to answer Mark's question, it's very important, again, to keep in mind that one of the confounds in terms of health is that fat people tend to be poorer. So when you're hiring a fat and thin person for the same job, you know, a middle-class job, for example, chances are they're not that different in health. Another thing to keep in mind is that most people gain some weight as they age. And so it's also important not to deny older people jobs because they're heavier than, let's say, much younger people. So I think this is where you often see weight discrimination intersecting with gender, with race, because, you know, in our country, poor people are often people of color. with age and other variables like that.
Does fat lead to poverty, or does poverty lead to fat?
Actually, that's an excellent question. Most people assume that first you're poor, and because of what you're eating or what you can't afford to eat, because of your lack of ability to join health clubs, that you become fat. So they assume that poverty causes fatness. And actually, it's the opposite. The evidence is much stronger for the opposite direction, which is that first you're fat, and because of that, you drift into a lower income group. So if I had two sisters, one who was much fatter than me, one who was much thinner than me, the research shows that thinner people get into more elite or prestigious colleges, that in the case of women, they're more likely to marry a wealthier man, which means, of course, they would end up with a higher family income, and they tend to get higher paying jobs. So in a way, fatter people, due to discrimination, end up making less money.
There was an interesting report, and I don't know if this is simply one example or if this has been sort of tested out over many people, but there was a young woman who was both African-American and fat and reported that she felt a lot more discriminated against based on her weight than her race.
Well, first of all, it is illegal to discriminate based on race or ethnicity, and it is legal in most places to discriminate based on weight. So she's probably right that, you know, people have learned to be much more respectful of individuals based on race or ethnicity, but when it comes to weight, they may still be saying and doing and behaving in very negative ways.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. My guest is Esther Rothblum, who's co-editor of the Fat Studies Reader. Let's go next to Sean in Terrell. Hello, Sean.
Hi, this is Sean from Terrell.
Hi, go ahead, Sean.
Hi, Esther, how are you?
Hi, good.
Good, good. I didn't read your book, but it sounds very, very interesting, all the things that you're saying. I just have a couple comments, and maybe you can just comment on my comments. The main thing that I see is, you know, we live in America, and America is the country of opportunity, which means no matter where you are in life, you can get wherever you prefer to be in life. If you are fat and you want to become thin, you can do that. If you are not happy being fat and you're not happy with the way fat people are treated and different things that happen that go along with being fat, you know, you can become thin if you really want to be. And if you are happy being fat, then there's some advantages to being fat, and one of the advantages that there are people that would hire a fat person over a thin or better-looking person, and I happen to be one of those people. And the reason why is because the jobs that I usually hire for are a backroom type of job, and I recognize that fat people are kind of discriminated against, and for that reason, if I hire one, I know they're going to tend to work harder, because they value their job more because of that kind of built-in discrimination. And so there are jobs out there that I'm sure people are just like me. They recognize this, they see this, and they actually look for fat people over better-looking or thinner people that have a better opportunity to find a job maybe elsewhere, and then they have to be replaced with somebody else.
Well, a lot of things to consider there. Do you want to comment on that, Esther?
Sure. I'm really glad, Sean, that you're hiring people, fat and thin people. It's very important, you know, for everybody to follow in your footsteps, basically, and realize that somebody's weight really does not affect their performance on the job. I also want to say something about the issue of this is the land of opportunity, and if people want to lose weight, they can. The research on dieting really shows that the vast majority of diets do not work in the long run. That is, people can lose weight. I'm sure almost everybody who's listening has lost weight, but really people do not keep it off. So the failure rate of diets is about 95%. And so what that means is that it's actually not very good to be yo-yoing up and down, losing weight, regaining it, losing weight, regaining it, et cetera. And so what we see is people losing weight, but then if you're in a workplace and you think about the people who have lost and gained weight over time, you very rarely see a lot of coworkers who've really kept a lot of weight off, let's say more than 5 years.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. You can also send us email to think@kera.org. I want to talk, Esther, about the idea that a lot of people who have someone in their lives who is fat and are of what other people would consider normal weight themselves will remind this person on a frequent basis, you shouldn't be eating that, maybe you should exercise, maybe you'd feel better about yourself if you did this. What do we know scientifically about people encouraging others to lose weight?
Well, what we know is that diets don't work in the long run, so obviously encouraging people to lose weight is not effective. But your point about you shouldn't eat that, I mean, all of us should keep an eye on the fact that we should eat nutritious food, not to lose weight, but simply because nutritious food is healthy, keeping in mind that often, you know, very nutritious food, including organic food, can be very expensive and, again, may not be affordable for everyone. But to encourage all of us to eat, you know, in a way that is good for our bodies is great, but to eat in a way that makes us lose weight, or for that matter, you know, urging thin people to gain weight if they're very thin is also probably not going to work. So eating for nutrition is great. Eating for weight loss probably won't work.
Let's go next on the line to Lawrence in Carrollton. Hi, Lawrence.
Hello, how are you?
Great.
Hello, Esther.
Hi.
This is raising a lot of questions for me, but it makes me think of the Ayurvedic system of body types, where there are three body types. In the West, they're recognized as ectomorph, mesomorph, and endomorph. And for the people with the heavier body type, it is not as easy for them to lose weight. And I was of the thinner body type when I was younger especially, and I couldn't gain weight to save my life. So it's, to me, as per one of the caller's earlier points, it's not a situation where anyone can be anything. These things are really rather fixed, and I'm just curious what you might have to think about that.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you that there are different body types, and the point you make about being a very thin man, for a lot of boys and young men, they can actually suffer, you know, again, from society's attitudes if they're very thin. And I just want to put a plug in that everybody should be respected for their body type, for their weight, that for their height, that really, you know, we need to treat people with respect. One of our authors compares this to a greyhound and a Saint Bernard. Some people are greyhounds, some people are Saint Bernards, and you just can't tell really by looking at them, you know, how much they eat or how much they exercise.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. You can also send email to think@kera.org. There are several essays in the book that deal with the media and how it treats fat people. And it occurred to me while doing this research that there are plenty of very fat people on TV and in the movies. And in those cases, their weight is sort of part of the character's persona. But there's not too much in the middle. You know, you see very thin people who are in the leading roles, and then you'll see fat characters, but there's not a lot that reflects sort of the middle ground of America.
Yeah, you know, the media, obviously, very often people who are portrayed in the media are people who are extremely attractive, successful, whatever that means for that time period. And so you're right that we typically see people who are very thin on the media. And I worry that when we see fat characters, it's important that they're not portrayed as clowns or in some way kind of oddballs or funny, that it's important to show people across all body types as well as all skin colors and all heights and so on, because often we have very little diversity about that in the media. And actually, a number of chapters in the Fat Studies Reader focus on the media, on popular culture, on television, theater, and so on.
Let's go next to Sue in Dallas. Hi, Sue.
Hi, this is Sue. I'm a registered nurse and have been for 30 years, and I have a comment with regards to what you said about poverty and obesity. I've been a community health nurse for most all of those years, and I would have to say that I have a concern that it's actually the parents and how they raise the kids and what they teach their kids about nutrition and what to eat. And also being in and out of communities over all of these years, I just take exception to the point that people start off fine and end up, you know, poor because of being fat.
Well, first of all, it's great if parents can serve as models for good nutrition. I mean, I think that's really important. Again, I would urge parents not to focus on weight loss or really obsessing about certain kinds of food like candy or ice cream, so that to the point that kids suddenly see those things as highly desirable. I wouldn't say that people start fine and end up poor, but obviously there's been a lot of studies showing that there is a lot of job discrimination and, of course, difficulties for fatter kids getting into elite colleges and so on. So obviously those things are going to be connected in the long run to lower incomes and so on.
We have an email here that says, many of the callers have pointed out the ways in which the fat person can and should change if they want proper treatment from society. I'm curious what you make of this shifting of the burden or responsibility for discrimination onto the person who is discriminated against.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. You know, really, this is a societal issue, and we always, as a society, should think about who are we disrespecting, who are we discriminating against, and really, who benefits from that? You know, what is going on there? So I absolutely agree. I think that's a great email that we need to focus not just on people who are fat, but on everybody. And why is it that there's so much bullying, teasing, discrimination, and lack of respect?
Another email we have here says, it is a fact that the body stores extra energy as fat when it's presented with more energy than it can burn. Isn't there some personal responsibility that comes with body size?
Well, again, people do not seem to have much ability to change their weight in the long run. And the same, again, is true of very thin people who are trying to gain weight. It's very difficult to actually change that. So, you know, if you're, again, looking at coworkers who are trying to lose weight, including people who have tremendous willpower, you're not really seeing big changes. And one example I like to give is that I taught for 20 years at the University of Vermont, and when I first got there in the 1980s, most of my coworkers were smoking cigarettes. And over the years, most of them quit smoking, which, as you know, is a very difficult thing to do and takes a lot of willpower. But during that same time period, I saw my coworkers go on diets, lose weight, put it back on, lose weight, put it back on. So these were not people who were lacking willpower, and I think it really showed me the difference, how difficult it is to really lose weight and keep it off.
Esther Rothblum is my guest. She's professor of women's studies at San Diego State University and co-editor of the new book, The Fat Studies Reader. We'll resume the conversation in a moment. Join us by sending email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Continuing and Professional Education, announcing a new 9-month intensive CFP certificate program starting in January in Plano. You can learn more at smu.edu/plano-cfp.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Esther Rothblum. She's professor of women's studies at San Diego University and co-editor of the Fat Studies Reader. You can join us by sending email to think@kera.org or by calling 1-800-933-5372. Esther, do you find that people who hold biases against other people for their body shape, whether that's fat, thin, or somewhere in between, recognize those biases within themselves?
Well, you know, I think some people feel that they're being well-meaning, for example, by stopping a stranger and saying, you know, you shouldn't look like that, you're probably not exercising, even though the person may in fact be exercising quite a bit. They may think they're giving advice, but I think others, you know, may in some way want to distance themselves from fat people because they're terrified. You know, everybody is made to feel somewhat fat or even uncomfortable with their appearance. So I don't necessarily think people are doing it to be spiteful, although some are, but it's important that everybody is treated with respect.
Let's go next on the line to Fort Worth and speak with Mary. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I just have a comment, and that is the remarks about overweight people being not healthy. I'm 61, and I'm 100 pounds or more overweight, and the doctor can't find anything wrong with me.
That's great. You know, so many studies have found that the people who live the longest actually tend to be somewhat over the ideal weights and sometimes to a considerable degree over ideal weights. And part of that is that as people get elderly, they often have trouble keeping weight on. And as people get ill, they often lose a lot of weight through the illness. But definitely, when you look at weight and health, you see that it's all over the place. that you really can't predict very strongly. Again, if you're aware of the income difference, if you're controlling for the income, you really see a lot of very healthy fat people.
Let's go next on the line to Lenora in Dallas. Hi, Lenora.
Hi. I guess I have a comment more than a question. Is that it seems that the burden of this issue, and it's hard for me to even say fatness, it feels like an insult, but it is more on women than men. And I know a lot of women who are overweight who really started with childbearing. And it's just that if I know someone is getting married and he's fat and she's not there, I don't really hear any comments. But if it's the other way around, you know, there's a lot of commenting about that. And I guess that's really my comment.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. I mean, I really can't talk enough about the difference we see when men and women weigh the same, for example, or are considered to have the same kind of BMI. Actually, one of the authors in our book, in the Fat Studies Reader, is somebody who is whose gender is difficult to tell. So some people see this person as male, and some people see this person as female. And this author writes about how when this person is seen as male, people say, oh, what a big dude, what a big guy. And when the person is seen as female, they'll tell her to diet or so on. And so Lenora's point is excellent that, you know, even though we seem to frame this discussion in terms of health, somehow when it comes to women, women do not have to weigh very much before discrimination kicks in, including in the workplace. They often are just slightly above whatever the ideal weights are before they're being told, you know, we can't hire you, or we need to fire you, or we need to let you go, or would you please not come into work when we take the company photograph, or things like that.
We have an email here from Bill, writing from Louisiana, that says, one really great example of how we prejudge people based on appearance and weight is Susan Boyle. She was the one who was on Britain's Got Talent.
Yes.
The reason that everyone was so blown away when she sang was because her appearance, dumpy, dowdy, older, was assumed to mean that she was a joke and could not actually be talented, intelligent, funny, happy, and successful.
Yeah, that's a great point that Bill makes. You know, really, in general, we should not judge people based on their appearance. And I'm sure we all have examples of, you know, somebody who was just fabulous at what they did and didn't fit, you know, the ideal image of what someone looks like, who is, for example, a singer or an actor or an athlete or a teacher, et cetera.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. We'll go next to David in Dallas. Hello, David.
Hey, I've just got a question about maybe a person's connection between their attitude towards themselves and depression and things like that. For example, I've got friends who they see their weight as something that they can control. You know, they know that they could lose weight if they want to, so they're not depressed about their weight. They just go, oh, yeah, I'm overweight, but it doesn't matter. I could lose it if I wanted to. But then I know other people that are, you know, they say, well, this is my genetics or whatever. They feel like they have no control over their weight, and they're really depressed about it.
Yeah, it's so sad that we link weight so much with self-esteem and how we feel about ourselves. When I'm at the gym, I see so many women in the locker room, you know, as soon as they come out of the pool or the racquetball court, they stand on the scale. And I really wish that that there wouldn't be any scales there, that people would love the exercise and not look at how many pounds they're losing from what they're doing. So I definitely would love it if we could separate our own self-esteem, our own feelings from weight.
I don't know how long you've been doing this work yourself, Esther, but does it surprise you that as more and more Americans are being classified as fat, that people still have such a problem with this?
Yeah, I've been doing this research for over 20 years. My own background is I'm a psychologist, and I have done a lot of research on weight and employment discrimination and just general attitudes that people have about fat people. I think what drives this so much are the industries that have a lot to lose, no pun intended, if people stopped worrying about their weight. So the diet food industries, the diet cola, diet cookbooks, even things like plastic surgery, so that, you know, really it would be great if people could feel comfortable with their bodies, you know, eat nutritiously, exercise, but not worry about their weight. So I really think that as long as there is still such an enormous market for these products, it's not going to go away.
Let's go next on the phone to Brian in Dallas. Hi, Brian.
Hi. My comment, I'm on the other end of the spectrum. I'm told I'm blessed with a metabolism that allows me to eat whatever I want to eat, but I get a lot of discrimination for being as skinny as I am. I've actually had three doctors, including my family practitioner, tell me they thought I was HIV positive without ever even testing me. And I have a hard time finding clothes to fit me because it seems in this country we're geared towards larger people. And, you know, finding jeans for the waist size and the length fits has become quite an ordeal for myself. And I was just wondering if y'all had any comments about that or any thoughts.
Thanks for your call.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. And, you know, it is so sad that our clothing is so limited in size, both in terms of smaller people and larger people. There are many countries, you know, where clothing is in the form of a sari or a robe that really is one size fits all. And so in this country, even for people who lose or gain 10 or 15 pounds, they find they have to change their clothing. But I'm also really horrified at the comments of your physician. Again, you know, people come in all shapes and sizes, and we cannot assume, based on someone's weight and appearance, either how healthy they are, how much they exercise, or what they eat.
There's a lot of information in the book about the fact that fat people tend to get less attention, even in an office visit, in terms of time as compared with the next person who comes along. What is an appropriate response, do you think, according to fat studies literature, of a physician who has a patient coming in who appears to be and is, by the charts, clinically overweight?
Well, I really would say that the most important thing is to focus on what the medical problem is and to focus on that. Because really, you know, many physicians and dietitians and nutritionists and nurses tell me that when they're told to put somebody on a diet, they know that that is not going to work in the long run. And in fact, it just makes it a failure experience, and it makes it more likely that that patient may not want to come in the future. So I would say that the reason the person is coming in is what that physician should focus on, not on how they look or what their weight is.
Let's go next to Plano, and we'll speak with Wendy. Hi, Wendy.
Hi. My question has to deal with that a little bit, about what is the cause of it. Other than the nutritional values, this is a overly medicated society now, and even my mother, when she started some medication, she had been a very thin woman and all of a sudden ballooned. And my husband, who has actually stopped smoking, but the stopping of smoking has messed with his metabolism also, and he used to be very skinny, and that also has an effect. So what health aspects and what studies are being done to determine other things other than just nutrition and how it's messing up with the body?
Well, you're bringing up some good points. First of all, one of the reasons, some people speculate that there are several reasons why Americans have gained weight, and one of them is the huge percentage of Americans who quit smoking in the last few decades. And as you say, when people quit smoking, they will gain some weight. And actually, one of the reasons that people start smoking or started smoking in the past was often because it made them lose weight. Smoking is a big risk factor among middle school girls because they know they'll be skinnier if they start smoking. So quitting smoking is always a fabulous piece of news, really, no matter how much weight the person gains. Compared to cigarette smoking, that is great. You're also bringing up another fascinating issue, and that is with all of the medications that people take nowadays, many of them actually cause weight gain. And so when we see someone who's fat or who's gaining weight, it's important not to think that this is because of what they're eating. They may very well be taking some medication that they need to take that is also related to weight gain.
Esther, even within the academy, there is still some disagreement as to whether this is a valid field of study. Can you talk about what some of the criticisms have been and what your responses are to those?
Well, you know, it's funny because almost every discipline in the university at one time was considered sort of a radical hippie idea. The university started, you know, in the Middle Ages, focusing mostly on the classics, Greek and Latin, and also religion. They were often, universities like Oxford and Cambridge, were often founded by religious orders. And almost any other discipline, you name it, has at some point been considered kind of a, you know, sort of an intruder, including, for example, psychology, which was my discipline for many years. And, of course, women's studies is a great example. So I have to say that luckily universities are almost always at the forefront of kind of trying out new ideas, some of which, you know, become mainstream areas later on, some of which result in some really great research, some of which have a very short life. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with this.
Is this attitude toward fatness uniquely American?
No, not at all. I think it happens a lot in Western cultures. So you don't see this so much in poor countries where body weight is a sign of status or a sign of money, including people who are very fat. So in many poor countries, when we see someone who's very thin, the assumption may be, well, they can't afford, you know, enough to eat, or maybe they have a disease that causes them to be thin, or maybe they're malnourished. And in this country, too, by the way, you know, historically, plumpness was a sign that people had enough to eat, and many people did not have a lot of food. So that really changed around the 1880s to 1920s, when medicine really had to struggle to shift from seeing fat as good to fat as bad.
Can you give us just a little bit more detail about health at every size?
Well, health at every size is a group that consists of many people in the health professions who have said that let's stop focusing on dieting, because obviously dieting doesn't work in the long run. People are miserable, and in fact, many people who diet are actually doing fairly risky and harmful things in order to lose weight. So let's focus instead on making sure that people are healthy. That is, that they're enjoying life, they're eating nutritious foods, they have access to nutritious foods, that they have health insurance and access to health care, and that they are they're leading active lives and doing activities that are fun for them.
And what do you imagine is the future of fat studies? Where do you go from here?
Well, you know, it's interesting. There are so many new areas. When I started doing research in this area, it was mostly people in the health professions who were looking at the data and saying, wait a second, you know, where are these ideas coming from that diets work and that, you know, weight is unhealthy? But now what you see is a lot of people in popular culture, in the arts, in history, in literature, in law, in social sciences, doing work, you know, all around the country and in other countries. We were inundated with papers for this book. We actually rejected about half of them due to space. And so it's really a burgeoning field, and I think it's going to continue in many different disciplines.
Esther Rothblum is professor of women's studies at San Diego University. She is a co-editor of the new book, The Fat Studies Reader. Esther, it's been a really interesting hour. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
My name is Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.
Think production team includes associate producer Betsy Lewis and engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.